Hi, everybody. This is CJ Wilson with Josh Olswich, and we are the Bitcoin Bottom Line. We're bringing you the latest, and I wouldn't say the greatest, maybe the greatest. We're gonna have some hot sports takes on what's going on today, which is I think the White House OSTP report has been published, and there have been a lot of people that have been providing information between the Bitcoin Mining Council, Bitcoin Policy Institute, Bitcoin Today Coalition, various other exchanges and whatnot. But this thing is like, this is just a hot food fight. I mean, the facts, the figures, some of the math, it's got some interesting proposals in there, Josh, but I'll let you kick off what you think. Where do we even go with this? What is the White House talking about with Bitcoin and crypto mining in general?
Yeah, so it's entitled The Climate and Energy Implications of Crypto Assets in the United States. And it definitely leans towards proof of stake, first of all. Undoubtedly, that's where it's trying to veer everything, which is understandable, like especially if ETH pulls this off. Great, good for them. And this has been a long time coming, and this is going to just ramp up exponentially, the ESG stuff, once ETH does go proof of stake, should they succeed in whatever degree that is to them. So it's a response to Biden's EO in March. All these agencies have to come out and say, like, this is what we think. Here, you know, he put forth this executive order and said, I want to know from you guys what's going on. You know, what should we do? Right. So this is what the report, how it came to be. I thought overall, though, its breadth and scope was pretty good. Like, some of the facts and figures that we'll go into weren't accurate or aren't accurate necessarily, but I was impressed. Like, at the very end in the appendix, they were talking about some coin, Cigna, formerly Burst Coin. Like, I've never heard of this stuff. And they're like, I was like, wow, okay. I just learned something from a government document.
Yeah.
So, you know, they did go extremely deep as far as talking about proof of work, proof of stake. They did talk about some of the benefits of proof of work. Now, I don't think they talked about enough of them. But yeah,
they talked about the benefit, the potential benefit for Bitcoin mining to reduce methane emissions specifically,
yeah.
Right?
Methane
is worse for the air quality and worse for the atmosphere and worse for global warming, theoretically, than CO2. The reason is because it's got a different specific heat index. And as it sort of floats up into the ionosphere or whatever, it absorbs more sunlight and therefore keeps that part of the earth a little hotter. And ironically, Bitcoin digest that through the process of mining off flare gas and then produces CO2 as a result. Now, the thing is, people say, oh, well, it increases CO2 emissions, but it decreases total emissions in that regard. And that's important to understand before we go too much further. Basically, what happens is on an off-grid Bitcoin mine, or really a lot of methane power plants, which are a thing, they take a huge well of natural gas. They fit a mechanical sleeve in it, and then valve so they can regulate the pressure. And through that regulation of pressure, they can burn it in a controlled way, like running gas through a car engine, and then drive these generators, which then make electricity. And that is how a lot of places around the world are powered, is through natural gas wells. And this is the big issue with Nord Stream, which is the Russian pipeline. That's how Germany is powered. Like, by and large, since Germany took their nuclear plants offline, their goal has been to run off of the Nord Stream pipeline and then solar and wind. The problem is solar and wind have not been reliable for Germany because it's not Arizona. And therefore, they're having to turn coal plants back online because they're relying on, you know, Russian natural gas, which is maybe not the country that you want to be like beholden to. And yeah. So I think that's where it's interesting. So on a micro level, there are off-grid miners that are operating, you know, a couple hundred terahashes or something like that, running like an old V8 engine converted to this. And then on the big side, there's huge operations in, you know, the Rockies and Texas and all over the place, Pennsylvania, that are running completely off of the electric grid. And so that's where, like, it is hard to calculate total grid strain from Bitcoin mining because a lot of the Bitcoin mining is off the grid, right? Which yeah. is kind of the part of the thing about Bitcoin is, like, you don't necessarily want to say where you're at. So there's some pages in there they're going through and they're like, oh, well, page 8, they're like, if they would just report their locations and how much energy they're using, then we could, like, actually grade how much they're doing. And yeah. it's kind of like, as a Bitcoiner, I'm kind of like, oh, hey, yeah, I'm a Yes, I'm down the street around the corner. That's as much as I'm going to tell you. You know what I mean? It's like very funny because you don't want to necessarily share that, but
Well, I think
yeah.
at scale, like we will get there. As it is, Bitcoin's a little, it's a victim of its own transparency to some degree, like because you can just measure the total mining capacity and energy. But I think we're going to see more and more of those build outs in the flaring, and we're going to see more and more reporting and like publicly traded companies that they're doing this where they don't necessarily care about the Bitcoin side of things, right? They just care about cleaning up the flaring side of it. I just saw too, Michigan, just because I'm from Michigan, I saw this. They're closing a bunch of wells instead of potentially using them for crypto stuff, right? So there's, and it's not cheap to like clean this stuff up either, right? Because they just sort of sit there until I don't even know, right? They just sort of dissolve and people hope for the best. Like, I don't even know.
Well, see, that's the thing too, is that it never goes away. Right. So what happens is if it's not like in a really, if it's not like there's a term aquifer, right? I'm not sure what the right word is for natural gas. It might be like a cavity or something. But basically underneath the topsoil, you have like rocks and sediment and all this other stuff. And so what happens over like literally millions of years is these pockets form. And these pockets are oil pockets or nat gas pockets or helium pockets or whatever else, because FYI, that's how we get helium is from is natural gas. Sometimes it's like mixed in there. So anyways, the hydrogen that's in the earth, the or hydrocarbon, if they're not burned and taken out, then they could like blow up. They could, you know, if there's enough pressure, if there's like a tectonic activity, or they could just like find another path and then just seep out. And that happens in a lot of like, let's say, old swamps or cemeteries and stuff like that, that they'll literally have like these methane seeps. And then it's like if you go in there, you can it's toxic, so that's not good. So the what a lot of people like I'd say the petroleum industry has been for years trying to extract that, you know, to make use of it before it seeps out. And so if you control it and you metabolize it in a controlled manner, then it's okay. But I think the whole document is about like greenhouse gas emissions, the whole thing. On page 9, they say that in the Inflation Reduction Act, which is like I'm using finger quotes because it's not really going to reduce inflation, but that they're spending $369 billion is allocated in there to fight climate change and reduce CO2 by 40% from the 2005 measurements to 2030. That's their target, is to take it down 40%. And I think that's like, first of all, it just shows you the scale at which the government is willing to spend broadly. And it also shows you the like, if you know what their targets are, then you kind of understand what they're going to try to do. Like, if I say, hey, I need to have a house that's this big, you know, I need to have a 4-bedroom house, you're thinking, oh, well, I need to have this many square feet per bedroom. So you can kind of like reverse engineer it. But for them to say $369 billion, that's a lot of money. That's a lot. The entire global financial crisis in the 2007, 8, 9 kind of wreckage, they spent $880 billion. So we're like almost half of that to fight the ethereal enemy of climate change, you know, which is it's very hard to there's no target of what climate change is in these terms. It's just saying reducing carbon, you know, emissions. But then if methane goes up, that's not addressed in carbon emissions. So it's kind of like it's sort of weird how they're sort of multiplying, and the equation is hard for me to balance when I'm looking at it to see where it's all coming from, where it's going. It just is it's a very fiat mentality that we're just going to end up spending money.
Yeah, it does focus on that, and I think like the green energy folks want everybody to just use less energy, and that's just never going to happen. It just isn't going to happen. That's why we need nuclear. We just do, and we need more efficient energy solutions rather than just cutting. You know, I think it was it the UK or was it some country somewhere? I forget. Said like we want to flatten our energy curve. This was like yesterday. And they're charging people potentially with jail time if they go above a certain degree in the winter because the energy stuff's gotten so bad.
See, this is the problem though. And there's okay, and back to the document again, page 17, they're talking about our grids were built and designed in the 20th century for 20th century's climate. Well, it's like the 20th century, it's not necessarily a climate thing, it's a population thing, standards of living thing. Where are people living? you know, people relocating. So it's like the grid itself is so challenging to manage because there's like a limit to how much the electricity can transfer over distance.
Right. Right. There's not a unit of energy that you can just infinitely transport anywhere you want.
The only thing you can do that with is Bitcoin, right? But but seriously, this is the thing with other energy sources, whether it's literally poop from a pig farm or liquefied natural gas or gasoline or, you know, whatever. You can move that stuff before you consume it. Whereas like there's not necessarily like a lot of loss of that object because you can contain it while it's moving around. Whereas with electricity, there is a sort of seepage, you know, as you're transmitting it because it's kind of coming out with heat or whatever else, or just as it's going through the transformers to sort of, I would say, to control it so it doesn't create like a big spike in voltage or something like that and blow everything up. You need to have these magnets and transformers and, you know, all these like stations and substations. And so that's like all, and there's people working at that. Those are a lot of energy spent just to kind of keep the rails on with the whole grid. But I think the thing is that, you know, when anybody starts to say something like, oh, well, it uses as much electricity as Argentina. All right. What is Argentina's economic contribution to the world? What's their GDP?
Yeah.
That's all I care about.
It's funny you say GDP because I saw this other infographic. It was yesterday or today, like comparing each state in the United States to other countries' GDPs. Mm-hmm. And like the UK is equivalent to California as far as GDP. Canada is equivalent to Texas as far as GDP. So when I saw, as we commonly do, like Bitcoin uses as much energy as Argentina or Finland or whatever else, like it's like, okay, what does that really mean though? You know, because the scale is, it's hard to like even adjust in your head what that even means and like why that matters. Clearly it's a lot of energy. Nobody's not denying that.
When you eat food, right, you say like, oh, I'm going to eat 40 grams of protein in this hamburger or something, but like how much of it is bioavailable? So in the same sense, how much of the energy that's being used is available, or what's the, like you said, okay, if California is like the UK, you know, and then Texas is like Canada, well then like what is a lot of energy, right? And the thing we always joke about is how like, oh, American Christmas lights, you know, keep us, they use so much electricity or whatever. But the fact that they're giving us is that U.S. residential lighting, it's in there, it's in the document. It's 59 billion kilowatt hours used just to light American homes, okay? So then they're like, oh, but we estimate Bitcoin could be using somewhere between 120 and 240 billion kilowatts. So it's a huge margin of error, like to say that we're not sure if it's like, I don't know, I have kids. I don't know if I have two kids or six kids, but somewhere in that mix, that's how many kids I have. And somewhere that's a quantum number. That's hard for me to take seriously because they're criticizing something, but they can't even pin it down. Now, that being said, the reason why you can't pin Bitcoin mining down is they turn off, they use immersion, they get more efficient, they use natural gas, they're off the grid, they're not reporting what they're doing. So it is, it's understandable. That is sort of the pseudonymous and anonymous nature of Bitcoin mining and miners and Bitcoin itself, that you don't necessarily want to report what you have. That's kind of the point. But I think we just have to look at this overall and say that the logical dialogue is economic activity, economic viability, how many people are using Bitcoin, how many people can it help? And that's why it's essential to stay with Bitcoin mining. Also, very simply, if there's more energy available somewhere, Bitcoin miners go to that place. They move around. And even big, huge facilities like Riot's facility, theoretically, they could pack up those ASICs and they could put them on a train and go somewhere else and, you know, put them somewhere in some other state if Texas suddenly didn't like having Bitcoin miners there. But they talk a lot about grid response, demand response. So there's actually like a high level dialogue taking place somewhere behind the scenes. And I know like our organization submitted a huge package to them to say, hey, this is some information for you guys. You know, there's other people that have done that too. So some of that's getting through.
Yeah.
But for sure. Some of the implications of seeing a 46 page study on Bitcoin or crypto mining, you know, in America is that it comes across a little bit as didactic, you know. And that is the one thing that an authoritarian, that Bitcoin people are going to like figure out a way to go somewhere else if they don't like the environment. They will pack up and go. And when they pack up and go, they're taking their families and their kids and their economic futures with them. And that's a scary sight to think about, all these Bitcoin miners and Bitcoin wealthy people leaving America and going somewhere else. That won't end well if that's for the Americans, you know, that stay behind. They're gonna wish that they kept those people. And that's why I hope they don't push us out in that regard.
Yeah, the report, like I said, kept driving home this like path of least resistance is proof of stake. Mm-hmm. And even in that table at the end in the appendix, they label proof of stake as highly decentralized. And it's like, I don't know about that. You know, you can't really trust the government to tell you if something is decentralized or not decentralized. But I think it's very clear that proof of stake is certainly less decentralized than proof of work. We're also seeing, you know, there was also in that same appendix, they were talking about security of proof of stake versus proof of work. And again, it's like, okay, it's pretty clear that proof of work is much more secure than proof of stake on many different degrees. We've even seen other chains just sort of glom onto Bitcoin to use Bitcoin's proof of work security, like Verablock. I know Stacks has some proof of authority thing, I think. Drive chains, which are like distant future if they ever come. And then I saw this thing about checkpointing using Taproot. This paper called Pikachu. I don't know. Silly names, but it's like that Bitcoin is known for its security. Like it's the cost of the electricity isn't necessarily the creation of BTC or the confirming of the transactions, but it's the HODL, it's the storage, it's, you know, it's the security. That's honestly where a lot of the energy gets used, right? Like, sure, like we're in a, you know, gold and analog sense, like pulling it out of the ground, but we're also storing the security elements in that electricity use.
It's made secure with each subsequent transaction and each subsequent block, right? Because as you have more miners online hashing, trying to get it to, you know, trying to compete for the winning block, you know, finish, there's also a element of it makes it harder for someone to, you know, do a 51% attack against it and try to unzip it, reorg multiple blocks. Like just to do a one block reorg on Bitcoin would be like you'd have to spend, like they're talking about it here about how much the annual spend is. You'd have to come up with all of a sudden, you know, 120 terawatts of energy worth of ASIC power all at once to do one block, right? Whereas like theoretically with proof of stake, you could get a couple people together, make a couple phone calls, a couple WhatsApp messages, and then decide that you're going to kick somebody out of something. And that's the fundamental thing that like people don't understand outside of the system. Whereas like, you know, I understand that there's a environmental side to things, meaning people care about the environment. I get it. I'm a surfer. I grew up by the beach. It used to piss me off when I would see litter in the sand or, you know, like even if I saw like something, but the fundamental reality is that like everybody poops in the ocean. Fish, whales, seagulls, sharks, octopus, you're swimming in animal poop the whole time. You build a resistance to that thought process. But trash, on another hand, is gross. And trash is something that we as humans control because we're the ones creating it. So these projects where they're cleaning up the ocean and stuff like that, that is a valuable thing to me. I see that as a viable way to spend money and spend effort and fundraising and to clean things up and then dispose of the trash in a better location. But to say that like you can't use energy is kind of like saying you have to eat your trash. You know what I mean? Because it's like, how do you, I mean, if they serve everything in a lettuce wrap, okay, I get it. But at the end of the day, you know, we produce goods and stuff and paper and stuff. And like, where does it go? You know, and there's a cost to having things. There's a cost to having security. There's a cost to having a lock on your door. And, you know, and that's, and Bitcoin does all of those things for you. So there is a cost to having that security there. Like, I don't have to call my banker to send a wire and he's sitting in air conditioning. He's driving his car to work. He's got insurance on his car. Someone works at an insurance company, they're sitting in an air-conditioned office. Bitcoin requires none of those people. And so that's kind of like when you start to look at the total transaction volume and the network value, and you get back to the economic power that Bitcoin has, the economic power that Argentina has, the economic power that Texas has, or Kazakhstan or you know, whatever else. And that's, I just love proof of work because it seems like everybody participates and has the benefit of that security budget. Whereas proof of stake, if you have one ETH, you can't run a node. You know, you can't run a validator node because you need 32 ETH or whatever it is. And that's like, you know, even today with the prices of crypto across the board being lower, that's still a lot of money. You still need $50,000 or $60,000 plus all this computer equipment. Whereas you could basically, like, you know, be a Bitcoiner just by running a node and make sure that your transactions at least are uncensorable.
Yeah, we'll know very quickly, again, like how terrible proof of stake is for ETH. So as a Bitcoin, it's worth just, you know, paying attention to all this stuff, because I see a lot of Bitcoiners just putting their head in the sand relative to every other thing. Like, no, you have to pay attention to, like, it strengthens and emboldens the reasons why we're here in the first place when you're seeing like the world falling apart around you, you know,
right,
as far as what we're doing, what we're fighting for. Just going to say, in regards to the grid stuff, it also incentivizes and promotes building out of these like green initiatives, you know. So to just say that it costs this much for this transaction on the Bitcoin network versus proof of stake or Amex, again, just like misses the entire point of what's actually happening, you know. It's just
right.
It's so not dilutive, but I don't know, it just makes everything way too simple, you know. It's not that simple.
the way I say it is, it's disastrous accounting to say that there's 2,000 transactions in a block and therefore there's this much energy used per transaction. That is the disaster of their accounting, because there's no mention of Lightning, there's no mention of paper wallets, there's no mention of any of these other things that are all secured through Bitcoin long term, but individually those transactions aren't using any electricity or anything because they're being batched, you know?
Right.
And so batched Lightning transactions with, like, what do we have, like 4,700 Bitcoin locked in Lightning now?
Yeah.
Something like that. So, you know, like the theoretical output of the Lightning network is massive. And as that grows, because that curve is going up and to the right, well, my perspective is up and to the right, but I guess it would be this way if you're from by having an economic incentive to innovate, people do. Just like ASICs are way more efficient, right? Like years ago, the ASICs were taking up like 800 watts or something like that. Now they're 3,000 watts, but they're doing, it's like seven times the calculations, or 10 times the calculations or something like that. Like an S9 is like 10 times less terahashes than an S19 XP. An S9 is like 14 terahashes and an XP is like 140. And an S9 uses like 1500 or 1600 watts, and then an S19 uses 3000. So it's kind of like we're seeing these weird, like, pulling apart of stuff. And when they say, oh, there's electronic waste, I'm like, man, if you can run these things in immersion, they'll run for 8 or 10 years, and then you can just kind of keep adding, and you're not necessarily wasting anything. There's no electronic waste at that point because you're not scrapping it.
Yeah.
And that misconception that like miners are throwing an ASIC away after 18 months is like super crazy. It's just,
and it goes back to the flaring stuff too, because like on that side of things, they probably care a lot less about being profitable on the Bitcoin side of things, right? Because their focus isn't Bitcoin. They're just doing it to justify the means of, you know, the cleaning up of the LNG stuff or the methane, you know? So
yeah,
the e-waste thing, it's, This just goes back to broadly the whole report. Like, we see the same talking points over and over and over again. So we as Bitcoiners just collectively need to do a better job at like providing new and better talking points that help convey, you know, a clear and honest message, rather than like e-waste and cost per transaction in electricity and it's bad for the grid and it's bad for the environment. like it's just the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah, that's where, like you said, it's about having the right communicators talk about Bitcoin publicly, right? That's one thing. Second thing is having the right people talk to the lawmakers. And then the third thing is having the right lawmakers. So I think we haven't really gotten to the point where the crypto community hasn't necessarily benefited from having one of our own get elected. But I do see that as the next phase of this sort of stakes being raised. I like playing chess, okay? And you think about it, like there's the people that sort of start the game, that's the pawns, and they're all valuable. Everybody's valuable,
right? You calling me a pawn, CJ?
I'm not. Okay. I'm not at all. What I'm saying is, at the end of the day, the game is how many bishops and knights and rooks do you have left to support your attack on the other side, right? And it's not necessarily always how many pawns you have left at the end. And what I'm trying to say is there's phases of development, right? There's the beginning of the game, there's the middle game, then there's the end game. And right now, I think we're sort of transitioning from the beginning game to the middle game. People, you know, they say stuff like, oh, first they laugh at you, you know, then this, then they fight you. Like, that's where we're at right now. This is the fight. This is the fight stage, right?
Would you say like the fourth inning, maybe?
Yeah, I would say that's actually a pretty good analogy, right? Because the fight that Bitcoiners want to have is freedom versus censorship, right? That's the fight. That's the good versus evil for us, right? It's freedom versus authoritarianism, totalitarianism. That's the fight that we care about, you know? I don't necessarily think like Bitcoiners are sitting here thinking, oh, this is the only way I can be wealthy, because a lot of Bitcoiners are super smart people that could be trading meme stocks or doing, you know, real estate transactions or whatever and making more money with less risk in the normal economy. But something breaks inside you when you see a speech from somebody and it goes off the rails and you're like, this guy shouldn't be in office anymore, or I can't trust this person in office with my financial future or my family's finances or whatever. So I need to do something about it. And Bitcoin's like sort of the first vote, right? But then eventually you're going to have to, you know, this is like a much broader thing, but literally the White House is talking about Bitcoin, right? Like, yeah, imagine, I mean, like this is where we're at.
If this report came out like 2013, 2015, like it would be just devastatingly awful. Like, this is actually, that's why as bad as this might be, it's like really seriously, it's great because it's just very informative, even though, you know, the talking points are recycled or inaccurate. I was just shocked at like, wow, this is like decently okay considering it's coming from the White House.
It's validating that it's a real thing, dude. That's the thing. It's not just this isn't just grandma's basement anymore. Like, we're really we're on the radar, you know? And I think as election cycle comes up right now, like we have a couple more months until the real, you know, midterm election cycle, a lot of politicians are going to be asking us, and it's great because sometimes you need to have something to go up against, right? You need to have something to debunk. When you go in there and you're like, hi, I'm here to talk to you about water. You should drink more. Thanks for listening. It's like, what kind of sales pitch is that? And then there's like, no one's sitting there going, well, I heard water's bad for you. You know what I mean? So it's like having this thing to take down allows you to see the value of what it is, because now it's being mentioned, obviously, on the national stage, international stage. And it's at the highest office in politics, the White House. So once we have a chance to debunk some of the facts and figures in there, or the approach or the methodologies or whatever, then the whole point of a debate is the truth comes out. That's the point. This whole like, I'm going to win a debate, they're going to lose a debate, da 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 da. It's like, just go have a fist fight, just go slap each other, okay? Like, if you really want to advance humanity, which is I think a Bitcoiner thing, then you want the truth and you want growth and you want intelligence to kind of number go up in those regards. And this is a great opportunity now, because now it's like, okay, we can hook into this and sort of scale our way up the building, and we're legitimized. You know, that's the word you were looking for earlier. We're legitimized, and we're, you know, we're validated in that regard. We're still pending more validations to publish, but you know, our transactions are getting accepted from a talking point standpoint.
Yeah, and it is bipartisan. It's not just, you know, that always worries me. Like, is it an East versus West thing? Is it a Republican versus Democrat thing? Like, if we truly want to be decentralized and get our mission out there,
yeah,
you know, it needs to be bipartisan. And it is. It has been.
Yeah, but we need hundreds of millions of users, though. That's what it is. So we need American mainstream adoption at some point. And I think there's people that are like pushing for mainstream adoption. There's people that are pushing for all these other things. There's people pushing for bans and regulation and all that stuff. You know, you can't necessarily force someone to open their eyes, right? The only way that happens is if you throw like a really cold bucket of water on someone while they're asleep, they wake up, they're generally not happy. And what I mean by that is when people get like thrown off the economic wheel, they land on a hard part of their body on the hard floor and they end up breaking stuff. And that's what we saw happen to a lot of people that were sort of unprepared for the 2008 financial collapse. I think those people are like more seasoned and aware now. And I think the last 2 years of, you know, sort of lockdowns and stimulus and economic waves and all this other stuff, people are starting to like maybe take a step back and educate a little bit more. They might be watching a little bit less of some particular channel or another, but they might be looking for more information on those channels about this stuff. And I think the more educated people are about their financial security and the potential for government manipulation in their industry, the more they're going to want to take sovereignty over their future and their wealth, which leads them back once again to, you know, that's one of these things.
For those listening, that is a symbol of the Bitcoin network in a coin form.
Yeah.
Well, I saw too, the UK is like banning old notes, like the 20 and 50 paper note, whatever pounds, I guess it is. I don't know. back to your point about like using government stuff versus not, it's like people, we have this fever against cash and we have this fever to like KYC every transaction. Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to bring people to alternatives just forcibly because they're not going to be able to use cash anymore. Eventually, you know, that's coming, well, I think, in our lifetime for sure. So, but that emboldens the digital asset stuff. And it again, legitimizes like, okay, this stuff actually has a future because we're, you know, you have no other way out, right?
Right. Yeah. You have no other side rail. And I think if you, it's back to this again, for me, my description of the CBDC as like the evil ski, you know, the central bank digital currency is like the evil ski that you don't want to stand on because it can just get, you can get rugged at any point. You can put a leg on the dollar and you can put a leg on Bitcoin and you know what's going to happen. You do understand that there is some sort of inflationary pressure to the money supply with the dollar because it's the international currency unit for many people. But Bitcoin has such hard rules to its issuance that you also know exactly what's going to happen with that down to the literally down to the block. And you know what, you know how many sats you get per dollar and vice versa. So like, I like that for me, dollars and Bitcoin a lot more than, you know, dollars and CBDCs or dollars and euros or whatever, because it's just, as you start to introduce more government controls, you have way less, I mean, you might as well be skiing with a blindfold on at that point. You just don't know what they're going to do as you add more variables, and more variables in this case, I would say more countries. Whereas Bitcoin is kind of like, it's countryless money. It's, you know, stateless money. It's money for enemies, whatever. It's kind of ironic that the reports recently, like, you know, people are like cheering for it or whatever on crypto Twitter. Iran, they're like, hey, we're using Bitcoin. Russia, hey, we're allowing Bitcoin. And it's kind of like, well, America, hey, like, you could get ahead of them and get some Bitcoin, you know, you could, and then they'd be pumping your bags and then they'd be trapped at that point. It's just like, once again, back to the chess match. And I think the problem is with a lot of American politics is they have these short windows that they have to execute in, you know, because otherwise they get voted out or they just time out. It's just one of those two things. And that's why I see there's this big push for, you know, the greenhouse gas or ESG or whatever, you know, from this particular administration, because I think the writing's on the wall that there will be another administration that comes in after them, you know, that will have opposite, and not maybe opposite goals in that regard, but maybe just more of their own, you know, idea of how to calculate those things and where they land on the hierarchy scale of human flourishing and, you know, energy use maybe being parallel as opposed to human flourishing and energy use declining, which I think we talked about earlier is not a viable platform, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly don't want coal and I don't want co-investment in other stuff, but that's what we have to do. You know, I don't want methane flaring, but it's a mess that we have to clean up. So we can't just ignore it like we're talking about. It's like, this is an option. I even saw, just my last point, this like methane flaring, I don't know if it's even called flaring, but like for a dump, like a garbage dump, there's some initiative, I think it's Vesper Energy. I forget exactly who it was, but they are going around talking to like garbage dumps to burn this gas to mine Bitcoin. It's like, great, cool, awesome.
Yeah.
You know, And if that helps everybody at the end of the day, it's here. We have to do something with it. We have to deal with it.
Right. But that's a mechanical. Yeah. That's a mechanical process that people shouldn't have any problems with, because the thing is that methane is just seeping into the environment otherwise. Right. So you imagine you have some big mountain of trash, and then you have the Star Wars trash compactor, yeah, you know, in like the tunnel, in like the little cage thing, and it's smushing everything. And then what that does is it physically concentrates the trash, right? But then it also localizes the methane where it's coming out of. So if they compress the physical trash enough in a contained space, then they can like capture the methane from that. And then just like a flare, a well, they could burn that and then run off it. There's a company that's doing that with pig poop off of, you know, I mean, like human innovation is limitless, right? But the problem is that if policy gets in the way of innovation, then, you know, nobody benefits in that regard. And we just have to make sure that people understand that. That if people are trying to regulate your speech, if they're trying to block you from, you know, spending your money a certain way or eating a certain way or, you know, whatever, like those people don't have your best interest. They have an agenda, and some, you know, and it's like that agenda might be long-term good or long-term bad, but it means that your rights are then secondary to this agenda, which can veer off to the side. And people just need to understand that a lot of bad things start by agreeing to go along with someone else's political agenda and not their own logical survival skills and their own logical right to, you know, have private property and stuff like that. So the stakes are raising. The stakes are higher now than they were in 2013. You know, like you said, if this report would have come out in 2013, it would have been kind of laughable in a way. It would have been really
Bitcoin would have been regulated to death. We would have never seen mining in the United States ever. It just wouldn't happen.
Right.
But if we present it as a Swiss Army knife of solutions, plus all the other benefits of money and all this other stuff, right? If we're just putting Bitcoin mining in a box and saying like, it can do all these great things. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's energy intensive, but it also does all this other stuff and helps promote cleaner, mm-hmm, less greenhouse gas emissions, blah, 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 right? Like that's where we need to shift this conversation.
But yeah, there's an episode of The Simpsons where Lisa is arguing with Homer about bacon and pork chops and ribs and all this other stuff. And he goes, okay, Lisa, like there's some magical animal where all these different types of meat come from. And she's like, yeah, Dad, that's the case. And, you know, it was funny because like when you provide for a Swiss Army knife, like you said, multiple tools, you know, all from one thing, one base thing that allows all these other tools to kind of exist and incorporate. A lot of people don't believe it. They don't understand. They're like, no, that's not possible. And it's like, no, it is. Look at this example. Look at that example. Look at this example. And that is where you have this, I would say it's an economic incentive to innovate. You have an economic incentive to maintain something property wise, to hold it and protect it. And then you also have the sort of like, you know, anti-authority or whatever to try to do it your own way. You know, you have like the sort of,
it's just the icing on the cake, right?
Like, yeah, that isn't independence. Exactly. But it's like, there's no other system out there. There's nobody else doing anything else that's going to create this. There's no like, I mean, unless maybe we were able to produce a bucket that has some sort of like evaporators and we could be water farmers, you know, that's the only other thing.
Back to Star Wars.
In the Star Wars. Yeah, exactly. So moisture farmers, right?
Like, yeah, there you go.
Uncle Owen. So that's the only thing I can see that would really have the same level of value as Bitcoin production and Bitcoin sustaining on, you know, through proof of work mining.
Yeah. I think we have to leave it there.
I think that's it. That's the closer. Is, you know, we brought the White House down to the Simpsons level, and then Star Wars,
pig poop, you know, like it's all
pig poop. It's just all a
massive,
in there.
Massive episode.
Bitcoin solves all those things. It could even solve Star Wars bad voiceovers, right? So, it'd be great if we could do that. So, Josh, thanks for your time today. What I guess the question is for the audience. Where would you point people to learn more about this issue?
Yeah. So Jameson Lopp always has just great, we've had him on the show before. He has great educational stuff. Andreas has great educational stuff. Antonopoulos. There are plenty of Bitcoin, like smaller Bitcoin collectives and initiatives, lobbying groups. they're starting to emerge, Bitcoin mining console. I just don't want, I hate pointing people to like one specific thing. I like to give them like a broad diaspora of options, you know?
Do you, because it's do your own research, right?
Yeah, that's right. Like, I, yeah. Don't listen to me. Don't listen to CJ, you know, or Valkyrie. Like, go out and research it. Like, if you don't believe us about certain things or you need more information, it's all out there for sure.
Yeah, and I would say also that the best resources are free in this case.
Oh, for sure.
There's great free resources. There's a lot of people that have done podcasts about this. There's a book that I'm really excited to read called Fossil Future from Alex Epstein. There's another one called Check Your Financial Privilege from Alex Gladstein. So, you know, it's very interesting that we in America have this vision of grandeur and everything's great and everything's convenient and all this other stuff. But the problem is that everything has a cost and a trade-off. And Bitcoin's trade-off is that it uses energy. And you know, what's on the other side of the equation is freedom, censorship resistance, security, stability, predictability, all these things, and scarcity. Those are all great things. And then the only cost is energy. That's it. And hopefully we can solve that riddle for the people in D.C., or we can get new people in DC. That's also an option. But yeah, if anybody listening has suggestions for us, DM us on Twitter and let's figure out a way to get the best information out there in front of the most people.
Sounds good.
All right. Thank you again for joining us on the Bitcoin Bottom Line. As always, these statements are not financial advice. Make sure that you're doing your own research on everything. Thank you.